for Thomas, charging through the midfield. Thomas, it's up for grabs now. Thomas!
Now Bold. And it's Tony Adams put through by Steve Bold. Would you believe it?
Still Nasri.
Looks like Shaman.
Welcome to yet another episode of Fusillade, the one and only Arsenal podcast based in America, starring four guys who write for the Short Fuse. I am Thomas Wachtel.
I'm Aidan Gibson.
And I'm Sean Harwood.
And, yeah, that happened. Arsenal lost, well, today, yesterday, 2 days ago. I don't know when this is actually going up, but we're recording on Sunday night. So Arsenal lost today to Manchester United 2-1. Obviously not what we were hoping for, but not necessarily something that was unexpected either. Personally, I was disappointed in the game, but not completely enraged by it in retrospect. I honestly did not think that we played that badly. We did not play well. We didn't play well enough to win. But we weren't total crap, which is a nice change from the past couple of games. There were definitely positives and definitely negatives. I thought a big positive was Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain's performance. And negatives were, well, the 3 points that we didn't get. That's a nice little surface evaluation. Aidan, why don't you give us some of your thoughts?
Well, I thought we started out off brightly, and then you know, the last 15 minutes of the first half, they were just targeting our right hand side, and you know, Johan Giroud was really, really bad, and you know, I feel sorry for him because he's a centre back. He's playing right back. He's not comfortable at right back. You know, you see it. He didn't want to come out and close down because Nani would have beaten him every time. And in the end, that led to him being more passive. Ryan Giggs getting too much time to cross the ball, and Valencia heading in. That was their first goal. I thought we played a lot better in the second half. We pressed. Nico Yonaris came on, and you know, this hasn't really been mentioned in the boo gate and the loss gate afterwards, but Nico Yonaris did a really nice job up against Nani, and that was a bright spark. You know, our two youngest players were probably our best two players, and
I'll definitely agree with that. I thought Yonaris's performance was a big positive as well. I don't remember who it was. I saw somebody on Twitter earlier today say, actually, it might have been No, I can't remember who it was. They said that they're not really certain if he's a long-term solution, but if Sanya is not ready for the next match against Aston Villa, that Yonaris should probably start ahead of Giroud because he played really well. And honestly, he's played for us a couple times this year, and I haven't seen too much out of him that I didn't like. So I'll definitely agree with that. Ted, how about you? Surface evaluation, first look.
I thought that we played really well for the first 10 minutes. Well, relatively well. That is, we seemed to control most of the possession. They weren't getting any chances. We had a couple of moments that looked like half chances, and then Phil Jones sort of just fell over after Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain tried to dribble around him and had to leave with what turned out to be some ankle ligament damage, which is harsh on him because there's absolutely nothing going on. He just fell over on his own.
Yeah.
But then they brought on Rafael da Silva and something shifted. I think he was pressing a little more than Jones was, and he was able to handle our wing play a little bit more. And United really came into the game from that point on. And the rest of the first half was a bit like the Swansea match. I thought we did a good job, though, of keeping Rudy pretty quiet, but Valencia and Nani were giving us problems, which was kind of predictable.
And this is going to be my first Piers Morgan-related annoyance of the day.
Boo! I don't like booing our own players, but I'm perfectly happy to boo our own
supporters,
celebrity supporters.
Does he count as a fan? I mean, does he have to? So anyway, he said beforehand, this is like 2 minutes I caught before watching the game. He said, if you stop Rooney, they won't score. Well, we did stop Rooney, but they did score. Basically, everyone beforehand was worried by the fact that we have no fullbacks, and we continue to have no fullbacks, up against Nani and Valencia, who were two of the better wingers in the league. So that's just my first Piers Morgan-related growl.
I mean, that's certainly what I was concerned about. I mean, yeah. Obviously, Rooney's a great player. He's worrisome, but I was pretty sure that between Mertesacker, Koscielny, and Song, they were going to probably not completely take him out of the game, but at the very least, they would be able to limit his effectiveness because the center of our defense is not our problem.
Yeah.
It's the wings right now.
Mertesacker and Koscielny, I thought both played reasonably well today. Really well, actually.
And considering how much criticism Mertesacker gets, every time he comes out, I think he's good. He's not spectacular, but he's always solid. And he actually did have one pretty spectacular play today. Granted, it was partially caused by the fact that
he's slow.
But there was that very good goal line clearance he had, which, I mean, if we had been able to nick another goal, that would have been a huge talking point. It didn't end up mattering in terms of the result, but still.
And Koscielny had a moment where I think it was Danny Welbeck looked like he had him totally beaten onto a through ball. And Koscielny just came flying back. I mean, he is fast. Mm-hmm. And he came flying back and got a block in on the shot, and it went up for a goal kick. And I thought, you know, like, that's Koscielny in a nutshell right there. He may not be the best aerially, but he does everything else pretty well. I mean, he's an excellent tackler. He's probably one of the best tacklers in the Premier League at this point.
Actually, he is the best tackler in the Premier League. He's won the most percentage of tackles.
Hasn't he only missed, like, one?
I think he's missed, like, four all season.
Okay. I remember seeing that as well.
So while he has some flaws in his overall game still as a center half, but there are some things that he can just do just really well.
He has flaws, but he has flaws, but they are things that can be covered up by other players. Sure, he's not great aerially, but Vermaelen is, so when they're together, they're a good partnership. I think that's a key thing for Koscielny is being put in the right situations. And that sounds like I'm saying he's not that good. Other players make him look good. That's the farthest thing from the truth. I think he's a spectacular player, one of my favorites. But he's even better when he's put in a situation where he can do the things that he does well, and he doesn't have to worry about doing the things that he's not as good at. So
right,
and you don't worry about his work rate either. I mean,
yeah,
I still think Koscielny Vermaelen is our best defensive partnership, but unfortunately, we've been able to use it only once this season because of Vermaelen being injured, then having no fullbacks, so having to play Koscielny at right back or Vermaelen at left back, you know, among various reasons, and that's disappointed me because I think that's our best partnership.
And luckily, hopefully, we should be able to start doing that soon because Vermaelen is, unless something happened after the game that I missed during my Twitter coma, he is back, and we should be getting Gibbs and Sanya back pretty soon. I know it had been rumored that one or both of them would be ready for this game. Obviously, that wasn't the case. Boy, do I wish it had been, but it wasn't. So I would imagine that they would be back relatively soon, maybe for Aston Villa.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I thought the second half, you know, so at the start of the second half, Wenger brings off Giroud, maybe because he was displeased by how much space he was giving to Nani for most of the first half, and replaces him with Nico Yonaris, everybody's favorite Cypriot Chinese English right back.
That's possibly the best combination of nationalities I've ever heard of.
It is really good. And he actually, I think he made a kind of an impact. He got forward a lot more, which was partially because as Aiden pointed out when we were talking before, United had stopped pressing as much. But also, I think he's just more willing to go forward than Giroud is as a right back. You know, it's not Giroud's natural position, and I think he's not very comfortable linking up with Walcott and getting really deep into the opposition half. And I thought we looked better in the second half. I thought we looked a lot better.
Yeah.
It was a much more open half. United had their chances too. Walcott, I think, shot over. Ramsey shot over. Rizzitti shot wide.
Then there was the inexplicable Van Persie miss, which I still can't figure out how he didn't make that. How he didn't at least get that on frame.
I blocked that out from my mind.
That was
that was his tallest moment.
Somebody fell over. I don't remember who it was.
Smalling.
It was. He just fell over, and Rusiski was just clear on goal, stopped, and laid it off for Van Persie, and nothing.
He took his customary really good first touch that opened him up for a good shot, and then he just lashed it wide.
Yeah.
From a position where you've seen him score about 40 times before. Luckily, though, he made up for it about 15 minutes later when Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain fed just a perfectly weighted diagonal through ball, and he just ran onto it and just crushed it into the far post.
I'd like to talk a little bit about him, actually, Oxlade-Chamberlain, because my stance on him has been pretty well known. Long story short, that people were getting way too worked up over him, considering that he was 18 and hadn't really proven himself. I think that he has come to the point now where I think he has proven himself. He's played in several games lately, in addition to what we'd already seen out of him earlier in the season. He's played well in almost every game, and I think we're starting to get a good handle on what he can give, what he's good at, what he's not as good at, and sort of what we can... We know what we can expect when we put him out on the field now. Should we be starting him in every game now? Should he be the first choice left wing until Gervinho comes back?
I'm going to say no, and mainly because I don't want him... He's 18, I don't want him starting every game. There's not many 18-year-olds who start every game and are better off for it. And I think also that there's a bit of the unknown with him in that, you know, no one's really seen this kind of player at Arsenal for a long time. Someone who's so direct, so... You know, so quick and drives right at defenders. And at the moment, I just want to limit that because I still think there are some things that he has to iron out in his game. I think his passing, while it's pretty good, could be better. I think he wasn't exactly on the same page as some of Arsenal's players at times today. And you know, maybe that's because he hasn't played in the first team. I think he has some issues to iron out before he's considered first choice. But I would like to see him a lot more than we have been.
So what you're saying is he's the Vance Worley of Arsenal.
Yeah.
I think, man, you guys with your
baseball references. Yeah.
That's awesome, though. I agree. I don't think that Chamberlain should be starting every match, but I think he's a player that should be getting more of a look in now than he has so far this season. I think... Two things. The parts of his game that are already really good are things that won't disappear anytime soon. There are things that he just has sort of innately that don't need to be taught to him. And there are also the things that are really hard to teach players if they don't have them sort of innately. Like, he just has instincts to just go, like Aiden said, just go straight at defenders. He has instincts to pass, when to pass. He has instincts about when to shoot, and he can shoot really well. I think the kinds of things that are lacking in his game a bit are more the types of things that can be gradually taught to him or imparted to him, you know. Our wingers never really play too much defense. They don't track back very well. None of them do. So we don't lose a lot with him there because he doesn't do that. But that's the kind of thing that you could get him to do more because he's only 18, I think. But the types of things he already can do instinctually for an 18-year-old, I think, are great. You know, and he's also just really, he's really pacey. He has a good burst of acceleration. But I don't think he should be starting every game yet, because I don't want to put too much pressure on him either.
Yeah, and also we don't want to put too much physical strain on him. We don't want to run into the same sort of thing that happened to Jack Wilshere with him, where we lose him for all of next year because we're overusing him now. Which I guess is a new thing we can put on the list of things to fear every time we get a new player, is overusing them and running them into the ground. I sort of agree. I think of the options that we've seen so far, he is probably the best one. I think he offers more than Yossi Benayoun. I think he offers the same sort of skill set as Arshavin, except for the addition of succeeding at any of it and pace. I don't really see Rosicky playing on the wing either. I think he's probably our best choice right now. But on the other hand, I don't want to destroy him by just riding him into the ground. If he's not first choice, who is? Aiden, I know you like Yossi a lot. Would you put him first choice, do you think?
I would certainly try him, because I think he has been... He's played, I think, one game in the league in the wide area, and he did pretty well against Wolves. I would certainly try it against Aston Villa, because I think that's a game where we can experiment a bit. We want to win in the FA Cup, because that's something that we could compete for, but I think we have to change the side a bit, because if there's anything that we've learned over the last couple of weeks, that, you know, we've lost a couple of players to injury, fullbacks, Arteta, and we've really struggled for it. So I think more rotation is necessary, and I'd like to see that next week.
Ted, what do you think? Who is our first choice left winger, if not the Ox?
I still think it's true. Well, besides Gervinho, you mean?
Yeah. I'm talking about until Gervinho comes back. Because I think he's pretty clearly, when we have our full team, I think our first choice wingers are Walcott and Gervinho, unless something changes. But other than him, who would you say, if not Chamberlain?
I still think it's Arshavin.
Yeah.
If that makes me a pariah, that's cool. But I like Benayoun a lot as a player. I just haven't seen him enough lately to know if he can still offer a lot. And he's the same age as Arshavin. Not that that's necessarily a thing. I know Arshavin has his limitations at this point, and I know that he is incredibly frustrating when he seems to, like, do something really boneheaded, which happens kind of a lot, but every once in a while he'll pull something out, you know? He'll do that, like the pass he made for Robin Van Persie at QPR, you know, that not many guys can do. I mean, Benayoun can theoretically do stuff like that, but we haven't seen it really too much this year, so I think it's still Arshavin, as long as Gervinho's in Africa.
It's sort of strange, because I feel like in one way Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain is first choice, but in another I would say Benayoun or Arshavin, in that I think we should play the Ox against the better teams that we face, but maybe in terms of getting more minutes, the other two should get that, just because I think they're better suited to handle the workload rather than a younger player. I guess what I'm saying is, in one way, the other two are first choice because I think they should play more, but I think that the better player is Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain right now. And some of that, like Aiden said, might just be because they haven't seen him. They don't really know what to expect from him. So, I mean, as they say in baseball, they don't have a book on him yet, so
yeah.
Defenders don't really know what to expect when they face him, and the more he plays, the more people see his bag of tricks and figure it out and adapt to it.
If Arshavin was 1-2 before, like Arshavin was 1 and Chamberlain was 2, it's probably 1 and like 1A now.
Yeah. I think that's fair. And not insane. I will say I would still like to sort of temper expectations for him. I suppose it's better to be optimistic about him than pessimistic and boo him every time he comes on the pitch and stuff like that. But I fear a letdown like we've had with a lot of our other players where we expect huge things out of a young player right after they come in. And it's hard to deliver that day in and day out for a long period of time. That's why there are so few great players. It's hard to do that. And I don't want to have a backlash against him like, say, what we've had against Theo Walcott or Arshavin.
That's actually a great segue to something I wanted to mention. And, you know, we talk about tempering expectations. I think we should really temper expectations on what Jack Wilshere's going to do when he comes back. Because I think he's going to be limited at the beginning. I love Jack, and I think he's the future of our club, along with other players. I think he's the future of our midfield. But I don't think he's going to be that good at the beginning, because let's face it, he's been out for 6-7 months. He hasn't played football in 6-7 months, you know, and I think he might get a couple of injuries at the beginning, because that's what usually tends to happen. I think he'll be rusty, and I don't think he's going to be the savior that everyone is hoping that he's going to be. So that's just something I wanted to throw out there.
Yeah. How do you think he'll be used initially?
I would expect that he will be used instead of Aaron Ramsey. Because I don't think he's the same kind of player as Arteta. Like, Arteta's very, very key to how we play at the moment and in terms of our midfield. I mean, in the preseason, we were using Ramsey and Wilshere, and that seemed to work fairly well. They had a good understanding with each other. But Ramsey clearly needs a rest. And I think that Wilshere will probably take over his role.
Do you think that, I think you're right about the role that he'll play. Do you think that they'll give him some games in the reserves, or will try to gradually incorporate him into like a substitute role at first, or?
I'm not sure. I mean, I don't have the reserve schedule in front of me. I know that I would assume that he plays a reserve game before he comes back for the first team.
Based on what we did with Vermaelen last year, I would figure he'd play probably one or two reserves games before playing a first team game. That's how, if I remember right, that's good with Vermaelen. He played a reserves game, and then I think he came on as a substitute. I think he played in a midweek reserves game and then came on as a substitute on the weekend for the first team in like the 70th minute or something like that. I may be wrong about that, but I think that's how we did that.
I think it would be similar to that. I think it would be similar to how Aaron Ramsey was beginning to come back. He came back and then he started playing. He did go out on loan. I think it'll be a bit different than that, because Jack's not going to go out on loan. I think Jack will play a reserve game. He might play one or two. I think we'll have him back for the Milan game. I don't think he's going to start the Milan game, at least not the first one, because I think that'll be a bit too soon for him. He might come on, and it'll be nice to have him, but I don't see him starting games regularly until at least March or April.
I wouldn't either. I and as for role, I would honestly think that we would sort of rotate between Wilshere and Ramsey maybe fairly regularly to get them both some rest. Because honestly, I've been scared all year that Ramsey was going to have a setback. Because as we keep saying, he's just still coming back from a year-long injury, a pretty severe injury. And honestly, I'm really surprised he hasn't had more setbacks. I think it says a lot for his resilience and his just sort of his physical abilities that he's been able to come back. He has not been great, and he hasn't even really been particularly good for a while, but he has performed at a level that you would expect from him.
Yeah.
A bit limited, but still somewhere in that neighborhood, and I think that says a lot for him.
Yeah, and I think that also the other thing about him is that you saw him when he played today and when he came off, he looked absolutely exhausted. And he runs the most out of anyone on our team. He presses the opposition center back with Van Persie, then he goes back into the midfield, and he runs a lot. And I think I agree with you. It says a lot about him that he hasn't had an injury yet, and touch wood, he won't. But he does need a rest. He does.
Like the third week of May, I think Aaron Ramsey and Koscielny should just like go somewhere and hibernate for like a month, because they definitely need it and deserve it. Because when you were talking about that, I was about to jump in and say, I don't know, Koscielny may run more, but he probably doesn't run more, but it seems like it because he's everywhere. And at the end of games, you look at his face and he is just exhausted but still going to the wall. Well, there's not really an easy way to segue into this, so we'll just sort of go. One of the things that I noticed, well, actually I heard about later because by this time I had the sound off on my computer, but I was not particularly pleased with the fan reaction to the Oxlade-Chamberlain substitution. I sort of understand where people were coming from, and it's still unclear exactly what happened, but there was some booing when Arshavin came on, and there have been reports after the game that the reason that the substitution was made, obviously, I was a bit confused when it happened, because I knew there was a substitution coming, and I honestly was okay with Arshavin coming on. Ben Ayoun may have been a better choice, but Arshavin works too. But I was confused as to why Oxlade-Chamberlain was coming off, because honestly, I thought he had been our best player to that point. There were some reports after the game that I saw that he had asked out because he was exhausted and that he had been sick this week, and that was part of it. He had been cramping on the field, and he felt like he wasn't going to be able to finish out the game, so he needed to come off. I'm not going to say that people shouldn't disagree with the manager, because honestly, that's stupid. Disagree with whoever you want, as long as you do it respectfully, I think. And I really don't think that booing substitutions is a particularly respectful way of showing that displeasure, particularly at home in the middle of a game. I don't think it does anything positive. All it does is negatively affect the players. It creates a toxic atmosphere in the stadium. And none of those things are a good way of winning games. I mean, you don't win games when the fans in the stands, who are supposed to be sort of the 12th man, are booing. Are you guys with me on this? What do you think?
No, I mean, I agree. I think booing is stupid, and I think it's really unfair. If you're Andre Arshavin and you're getting coming on is getting booed, that can't be a great feeling. And as a side note, did anyone Robin van Persie's face when Oxlade-Chamberlain came off? I think that said a lot, and that was a little concerning for me because he looked kind of displeased, and we all want him to stay.
But on the other hand, he's the captain. I mean, if there's anybody on the team who has a right to take issue with something like that, it's him. I mean, he's earned that sort of leadership position. I will say I'd rather it not happen on the field, but on the other hand, he made a face. I mean, it's not like he was running over to the bench to argue with the manager. But
and I'm sure if he isn't happy, I'm sure he'll talk about it with Austin in a calm way, because that seems how Van Persie is. How he deals with these things,
He also probably didn't know that Chamberlain was cramping up at that point.
That too. That
and honestly, too. I'm not. I've actually heard some people say later that maybe that wasn't actually accurate. So I'm not 100% certain on that. But I did read that from a few people who are pretty reliable when it comes to things like that. So
and that's what the manager said. So. But in terms of the booing, I think this has just been the culmination of recent events in terms of, losing against Fulham and Swansea, not having any fullbacks, not looking to sign anyone, which I think is a major disappointment for Arsenal fans who are still somewhat reeling over the fact that we lost Cesc Fabregas and Samir Nasri in the summer, and we haven't replaced them with someone who, you know, has that spark, has that name. We haven't replaced them with that name quality. I joke about this on Twitter, you know, when I said crisis level threat severe, but I think that a lot of fans do believe that, and that's why they booed. I'm not saying it's the right decision, but I think there's a reason why people boo.
I think people like to think that they can boo because they've paid money to be there. But I think that they need to consider that everybody there wants Arsenal to win. Even the people who are booing, they want Arsenal to win. I don't take issue with that. I think they need to consider, though, that the only conceivable positive outcome of them booing their side, at home, is to light a fire under the players to get them to perform better. But anybody who's watched this Arsenal team for the past 4 or 5 years probably can tell at this point that this squad doesn't have the type of personality that's going to react well to being booed.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Some squads might. Some teams might be the types of dudes who just get fired up when people are booing them because they want to prove people wrong. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing that Arsenal wouldn't respond well to booing. It's not a bad thing or a good thing. I think it's just the way it is. So if you're sitting there in the stadium and you're booing, I think you need to ask yourself if there's any possible positive outcome to that other than you just popping off and being kind of an ass.
And that's sort of what I think. I hate to say it like this because it sounds like you're demanding something of people for going to games, but I almost think that you have a responsibility, if you're in the stands, to be a part of the team, to help the team. If you're there, you should be part of trying to create a positive atmosphere for the team. And I don't mean just being ridiculously, sickeningly optimistic about everything. I just mean, don't be negative. If nothing else, just shut up.
Right.
Like, you don't have to cheer Arshavin as he comes on if you don't want to, but you should not boo him. If you don't like it, just be quiet.
Or
say, what the hell's going on? Even that isn't booing, because that doesn't necessarily send a message to the player that can just totally smash his spirit.
Yeah, and I mean, even if you want to go one step further and say, look, it's a free country, people can boo if they want. And if they feel like they want to boo, that's fine. But what they can't do is boo and then have the expectation that that's going to help. They can't both boo and then complain about the team performing badly. Because part of the reason the team is performing badly is because you're booing. If you want to boo, that's your right as like a human being in a country other than North Korea or whatever. But don't boo and then ask after, like, well, why were they so bad today? Well, you know, you weren't helping them be any better. You can't have your cake and eat it too.
And I mean, sometimes we hear them booing at halftime or at full time because the referee's been really rubbish and has made and has had decisions go against us. But today there was booing at halftime, there was booing at full time, and I think it was at the team. And I think that's just really silly. The team we played well against Manchester United. They're in second place.
I think the team is smart enough to tell the difference. I think that they know when they're being booed and when they're not. And there's really no ambiguity that Arshavin was being booed, whether it be him, the person, the player, or whether it was the fact that he was coming on. In either way, that's not a positive thing for the player.
I think it was the decision to take Oxlade-Chamberlain off that was really disappointing, and that prompted the boo. I don't think if it had been for Arshavin, I don't think it would have happened.
And that almost makes it worse, because if this thing about the cramping is true, there was a legitimate reason for that to happen.
Right.
And the people in the stands have no way of knowing that, so just shut up.
Nobody
knows. And I mean, the thing is that if he felt like he couldn't continue, I mean, we don't know. He could have ended up pulling something or something, in which case
exactly.
The fans would complain about, you know, typical injury-prone players. You can't have it both ways.
You can't.
And I fully admit that I openly questioned the substitution on Twitter, and I wasn't pleased in the match thread about it at all. And I probably swore a bunch, but I also didn't know about the cramping, you know, which doesn't excuse my sort of like losing my temper. But I think it was Gunnerblog on Twitter point out that there's sort of a difference between booing at the stadium and getting angry on Twitter and the internet about things like that. Not that I'm trying to like excuse myself or whatever from.
It's doubtful that the players are reading the Short Fuse match thread during games. So
and if it is, it's awesome, so.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I almost also feel like it's sort of maybe a thing that we might all get more upset about than, I guess, Arsenal fans based actually in London or England who can actually go to games. Because honestly, it bugs me when there's such a toxic atmosphere at the stadium, because all I think is, if I were there, I would not be doing that, but I can't be there. I almost feel like the people in the stadium are my proxy.
Yeah.
And I want them to do well. I want them to sing and support the team like I would if I had the money to fly across the Atlantic Ocean and go to a game, which I don't. It bugs me.
Yeah.
You know, we should point out that I don't think it was the majority that were booing.
No, of course not. But I'm not talking about all fans in this.
Right.
Just the ones who are booing. And honestly, I feel that way about all teams. I mean, when I'm watching a Pacers game on TV that I couldn't get a ticket for, if people boo our players, I feel exactly the same way, even though I live a 20-minute drive from the stadium and go to probably half their home games. So, I don't know, maybe my guess about it being linked to being across the ocean from them isn't all that close.
I mean, I think sometimes there is a time when booing is maybe justified. I don't complain when people boo John Terry, because let's face it, he's a horrible person. I don't have a problem when people boo Joey Barton because he's a horrible person.
Well, there's a difference, though, between that and what happened today, in that
these
are opposition players. I don't have a problem with booing. I have a problem with booing our team.
Right. And, I mean, I don't know. If there's a really self-centered, conceited, getting paid way too much money for not doing anything. Basically, if there's, Oliver Perez playing for Arsenal, and he refused not to take a wage shot, or he refused not to play in the reserves or something, maybe it's justified, but today is totally not justified, and, you know.
I still don't think, would that happen when Oliver Perez was with the Mets, and I was upset by that, too. But that's at least a thing where I think reasonable minds can disagree. I can't see an explanation for booing our Chapman.
I just think after like what that. Happened, after the treatment of Emmanuel Abue 3 years ago, I think it was, when he was booed so badly for having an off day, even by his standards. I mean, he's not the greatest right back in the world, we know that, but he's a decent player when he's playing well. And he got booed so disgracefully that one game at the Emirates that he couldn't play for a period of time after that. He was crushed. You know, and everybody loves Eboué, and to do that to a player is when he's doing his best. You know, Eboué's not the kind of guy he's not the kind of guy who doesn't try. I think after that, nobody at the Emirates should be booing anymore, because they have an example. Right. There's a historical example of.
We've seen the effects of it.
Yeah, I mean, there's no good outcome from it. There's just no positive outcome at all.
I sort of feel like there's a public trust that you take when you buy a ticket to a game to represent all of the fans who aren't there, who for one reason or another couldn't be there. And I think our away fans do a spectacular, brilliant job of doing that.
Right.
And I wish that the factions of our home fans that don't represent us as well would stop.
I mean, did you hear any boos when we were losing 8-2 against Manchester United?
No,
not at all.
And to be fair, I want to make sure that we're clear about this. It wasn't everyone, and it wasn't the whole game. I thought the fans did a spectacular job for almost the entire first half. A lot of times we get criticized, I remember Dortmund singing at us, "You only sing when you're winning." They were singing the entire first half almost.
Right.
And that's what it should be.
Right. And I think
it's not that hard.
No. And it is the minority, but the problem is that that's what gets reported in the media. That's what gets reported on, you know, on our blog, on our podcast, that there are fans booing. And, you know, that's just not a good image for us. And if I was a player who was a prospective transfer to Arsenal, why the hell would I want to go to a place where, you know, there's factions of fans against each other, there's, you know, booing. It's just not a good atmosphere. As you say, it's toxic. Why? It's not only hurting the team on the field, but it's also hurting the team's image, which, you know, shouldn't happen.
Yeah, Gervinho gave his ticket to Eden Hazard so he could go to the Emirates today to watch the match. And, you know, he had to put up with probably hearing sections of the crowd openly calling for Wenger's dismissal when he made that substitution. I mean, how is a player... I mean, admittedly, we're not probably going to buy Eden Hazard because they want 30 million euros for him, but why do you want to become part of it? He still may want to. I mean, maybe he can recognize that for what it is. I hope he can. But, yeah, it's bad.
It doesn't really add anything. It's only a negative, and I wish I could understand why people do it. I actually saw something a little while ago on Twitter that about this specifically that I liked. About my least favorite argument in this situation is that people say that they have the right to do that because they paid good money to go to the game. And it was a Philippe Auclair tweeted. I'll just read it word for word so I don't mess it up. Fan insults his player. Other fan asks, why? Because I paid £40. Fan takes £40 and proposes it to the other. Can I insult you now?
Yeah,
Mic drop.
Yeah, pretty much. Do we want to talk about United's second goal at all?
Do we have to?
No. I was just curious.
No, I'm kidding. Yeah, we could talk about that a little.
Just briefly.
It was great play from United. I mean, they passed straight through us. Vermaelen didn't do a particularly good job against Antonio Valencia. Neither did the luckless Andreas Schaven, positioning was suspect. He was probably too narrow. He took too long to get out to Valencia, but, you know.
But he was thrashing around like a crazy person in there doing what he could.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like Arshavin didn't get stuck in. It's just that Valencia's huge, and Arshavin is wee. And, you know, he got his foot in a couple of times.
And, I mean, it's not like Oxlade-Chamberlain might have been wider. He might have been more eager to close down, but he probably would have been beaten anyway, so...
I do think that the rest of our defenders got caught ball watching once Valencia was clearly beating Arshavin and making his way into the penalty area. I mean, there was a weird sort of deflection. It just happened to fall right in front of Welbeck. That happens, but nobody was marking Welbeck at that point either.
And I think Vermaelen was seen to be too slow to get out as well. I think that's a real problem in terms of, you know, not having a left back, someone. Because Vermaelen, he's played left back quite a lot before, but he's still not. I don't think he's a natural left back. And, you know, left backs seem to. Full backs are more comfortable in 1v1 situations. Centre backs aren't so comfortable in those situations. And I think that's really shown over the last few games where we've conceded several goals that might have been prevented if we had, you know, real full backs. So, yeah, it's a problem that hopefully will be fixed soon. And I think that. It was evident again on their first goal and on their second goal.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously we've talked about this. I know each of the three of us has bemoaned it on Twitter and in match threads and stuff. It's annoying that we have gone so long with an obvious hole in our squad that has gone unfixed. And honestly, I don't know what the reasoning is. I don't know what's going on. I can only assume that we have tried and failed to bring in some fullbacks on loan, but I mean, it's just, it'll be very nice when we don't have to play people out of position anymore. And I hope that comes soon.
I hope that when Gibbs comes back, I do hope that he can put a good run of games together.
At least three?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. You know, if Gibbs had never been injured before and he was coming back, I'd be fine with not getting a left back right now. Because I can see where Wenger is coming from when he says, well, how many left backs do you want us to have on the books? I understand that. But Gibbs has never, never put together a run of games beyond like five or six at a time in his career as a senior player.
Yeah.
At this point, it's not that I don't want him to do well and to succeed, obviously, but I don't think you can rely on him.
Yeah.
It's hard to say, but I just don't think you can. I can understand Milan not wanting Taiwo to come here since we're playing them in the Champions League.
Yeah, that was when I was sort of, the reaction to that I thought was a little too far because, I mean, what the hell reason does Milan have to give us a player? Like, it's in their interest for us to be at crisis alert level severe, especially right now. But, I mean, apparently, Ali Sissoko isn't going to come out on loan only for a sale. And personally, I think it's dumb to have three first choice left backs on your team. But if you can figure out a way to clear space, maybe sell Gibbs. I mean, I don't know if we can rely on him either. Although, to be fair, I do remember seeing some people say last year that maybe we can't rely on Robin Van Persie to be fit. Maybe we should just sell him and try and get somebody else. And look how dumb we would have looked if we'd done that.
Yeah.
And
I'm not saying that Kieran Gibbs is Robin Van Persie, but...
He is an England international, though. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, you have to think at some point he's not... It's not like Abu Dhabi, where Dhabi constantly has problems with relating to his that ankle injury that he got 5 years ago. That, you can see, it's that Kieran Gibbs seems to be really, really unlucky.
Yeah.
At some point, it's got to change, we think.
I hope it's the case.
Maybe at some point he'll get really lucky and turn into the greatest striker the world has ever seen.
Yeah. Well, he did score against Shrewsbury in the League Cup this year, so...
Yeah.
Auspicious start.
Yeah.
Anyway, well... let's get some housekeeping taken care of. Once again, you have been listening to Fusillade, the Short Fuses Arsenal podcast. If you have questions to send in, we didn't really get to any questions this week, but if you have questions you'd like to have answered on the podcast, the email address for that is fusilladecast@gmail.com. Send us some stuff. We'll try and answer it. I would like to, as usual, thank MidAmerican for letting us use All Is Gone as our theme song and triumphant entrance and exit music. I think we all just need to go to bed.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it has been a pleasure. Hope you enjoyed listening. For Fusillade, I am Thomas Wachtel.
I'm Aiden Gibson.
And I'm Ted Harwood.
Thanks for listening. And as always, up the Arsenal.